This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 High FM.
And we are indeed here. Sorry about the brief technical delay. This is Brooke Spector, and I'm host of the Deep Dive every week on Friday mornings. And we have senior lecturer Frederick Kirsten. And we're going to talk, not surprisingly, we're going to talk about the State of the Nation address, what it means, what it didn't mean, what it was and what it is not, and why we should pay attention to what I perceive to have been a not particularly subtle shift in the direction of a presidential embrace of business. And I'm not sure if everybody agrees, and I'm not sure if everybody thinks it's a good thing, but it clearly, to my mind, was a thing. And Fred, you prefer Fred or Frederick?
Fred is fine. Fred is fine.
we're an informal show, so Fred it is.
I
know you've been watching State of the Nation addresses, and you know they're part and parcel of a larger tradition in America, State of the Union addresses, in Britain, opening of Parliament types of addresses. They have multiple purposes, only one of which is to set out an agenda for the future, and the other is to do a fair amount of crowing about successes and wonderful things that we have bestowed upon you, our citizens. How do you judge what we saw last night?
I think from start, well, the first thing I can say is we've seen progress. I think the president reflected to it to say that we are at a better place now than we were last year. And yes, the numbers do show that. But it's also a bit of a strange time to have this long, long sewn address, because I think there's so much riding on this because it's President Ramaphosa's last, technically his last sewn. There's a lot of political things happening this year, of local elections. A lot of the parties will elect new leaders. So there's a lot of moving variables. So this sewn was probably not to say too much, but to try to keep everybody happy. And that's what you probably saw. You saw them talking a lot about different things, but in the end, they would try to keep everybody happy in terms of showing that there is progress towards the great issues in terms of water, crime, all of that, but also in terms of infrastructure investments, growth, and that's important. So that's what I picked up from the SONA.
If I were to come up with one key phrase that I heard, I ran out of fingers counting it, occurrence. Public-private partnerships. I kept hearing this over and over again, as if that was a magic incantation that would chase all the dragons and the goblins and all the bad guys, the Tokoloshes, and send them all on their way. Public-private partnerships. Is this the cure to everything? And do you agree with my judgment, more importantly?
I think, importantly, the public-private partnerships has been one of the success stories the last year with the GNU, and the last maybe before that even. The public-private partnerships, especially within the energy sector, within the logistics sector, I think that has been success stories. And I think now that is seen as the best way forward, especially for attracting investors. I think the investors are seeing the public-private partnership as something that can really strengthen South Africa, and investors want to connect to that. I mean, if you look at what has happened at Home Affairs with the private sector coming in to assist with some logistics with the government, I think that is the way forward. But the problem there is also this theoretic that the government still wants to keep ownership and to not let it slip. So they want to still have the power, but still they have to engage with the private sector, because the private sector is so strong and they can solve so many issues that the government currently has. I do believe it's something moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, you I think you've identified a sort of a subtext to all this. Yes, we want corporations to work with us because A, they're more efficient, presumably, and B, because they have money, certainly, and C, because they actually know what they're doing. Again, a question that needs to at least be thought about. But we, the government, will still set the rules. We'll still decide on what the game is, and ultimately, we're still going to decide on how we're going to divvy up the results. Is that a practical model going forward, or was that a temporary expedient? I take your point, though. For example, with the home affairs, getting a passport or an ID card or any number of other kinds of transactions into the future at a bank is a whole lot less trouble than standing in line for 4 days at Home Affairs Department.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think if you want to look at whether it's a temporary solution, I think you need to think about the nature of the private sector in terms of, yes, they are in South Africa, they're quite strong, but they are still subject to the institutions in South Africa. So, and institutions are governed by the government. So the government will ultimately have the say about, like you say, the rules of the game, which will then attract investors. The government's main accountability is then still the people. That is where the biggest issue lies. Is even if the private sector comes in, if the government can't create an environment where the private sector wants to come in more, then that can lead to problems with the people. So that for me is the model. And I think that's important to see. Yeah.
We're going to take a very quick break, station identifications and making our corporate sponsors happy people.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooks Spector.
And this is indeed the Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooks Spector, and we're broadcasting live on Friday mornings. And my guest this morning, senior lecturer in economics at the University of Johannesburg, Fred, as we are now calling him, Fred Kirsten, and we're doing a bit of a quick deep dive into last night's State of the Nation address. Fred, one of the things that I don't know about you, but I've been out of the city for a couple days, and when I left, we were running around the house filling up pots of water just before the water disappeared and trying to take showers with a bucket and a dipper. And I was warned this morning, take your shower early or you'll be in the pool. The president spoke a significant amount of his words on the water crisis, how yeah. local governments have been unable or unwilling, perhaps, to organize themselves properly to deliver water on a thorough and ongoing basis. Even though in Johannesburg, of course, we still have a water crisis, and it doesn't look like it's being solved, and you have a mayor who doesn't appear to be aware of it, and you have a provincial premier who takes showers in hotels rather than complain about the problem. The president, his response to the water crisis was essentially a ministerial working group. Explain what's going on here.
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting story, because people were saying while people are watching the State of a Nation address on the TV, they were also suffering without water, which is really being seen as it's a basic right to South Africans to have water, to have a running tap. And I think in the end, the biggest issue here is still the people who gets affected most are those at the lower end of distribution, income distribution, and the middle class. I think those are the ones that really suffer from this. And again, there's this discontent, this displacement where the government is maybe talking one thing, but then the people are suffering on something else, or really not really that connection. And I think that is something that's even stood out here. So that I know the government is trying a lot to now say, listen, but we are putting the task teams there, we are sending money, but the problem with the money being sent is the last few years, water has still been an issue the last few years. If you go back to previous SONAS, water has been an issue. So pumping more money into that system, it's just about whether that money will actually solve the problems because of efficiency issues at local municipalities. And that has not really been, that has been addressed to some degree, but it's still a plan. It's not been implemented. So I think the implementation of strengthening local municipalities, of the government stepping in, that's important, because I think, again, water is a crisis currently in Gauteng because of the degrading infrastructure. It's very expensive to upgrade, so you will need a lot of money. And again, we don't yet know where all of this money is coming from, given all the different things the government will have to address, like the foot and mouth disease, crime. There's so many other issues also that the government needs to focus on. So the money is the biggest problem. So again, the budget speech in a few weeks' time will tell us more on that. But yes, for me, it's about the money coming in. Where is that money coming from? But also, is it being used efficiently to solve this crisis?
One of the things that that struck me as I listened, there were sort of two halves. There was, look what we've done, and this is what we're going to do because of, as you say, foot and mouth disease, water, police stroke crime, government inefficiency. You know, these are the priorities we're going to solve. Somewhere in all of that, there was very little of, we are all in this together. And as citizens, I want you to help us to do X or Y or Z, and we will work with you on A and B and C. I never got the feeling that it was a, yes, there was lots being said, but there was less being taken into the confidence of the citizens of the country. In a sense, it was an analysis rather than an embrace.
Yes, I think that's a good observation, because at the end, the president did try to make his voice heard, and he ended off with, let's rise together, talking about inclusive growth and making sure economic growth is not just there for the wealthy, but also for everybody, and everybody gets picked up. But I think in the whole speech, the general theme there is that he doesn't want to maybe give the responsibility to the people, because I feel a lot of the people still feel it's a local government issue. It's about service delivery. And also, it is a very sensitive year in South Africa with political changes, especially the local government elections and within local parties, the certain elections taking place. So that will change the whole landscape completely. So even the GNU is subject to change or to some variability given what is going to happen with those elections. So I think everything that was said was trying just to sugarcoat everything in South Africa, saying there are issues, we're trying to address it, and we are implementing the plans. But the numbers at the moment don't really align with that, because we're not growing enough to actually reduce unemployment and those other things.
In other words, if I were to draw a line from this speech to the budget speech, which comes a little bit later on, that's where the use a tired analogy. That's where the rubber actually will meet the road, in all the priorities and all these we will do's and we will make and we will achieve. That's where you find out how it's going to be paid for, and who's going to have to pay for it.
Yes, I think that's the most important part, because the money is the biggest issue. It's in terms of, where do you get the money to solve all these different problems? Because normally you would had unemployment as your biggest issue, which is still the biggest issue. Mm. But now you have other issues like the water crisis that costs money, crime, that will also cost money to reinvent that wheel, the policing and everything. And then also then what do you do with the foot and mouth disease that hasn't yet shown the impact it has on consumers? It's still something that's impacting farmers, but not yet impact on consumers. And if it doesn't get sorted out quickly, it can have a big impact on consumers with inflation and prices, food prices, especially the poor. Because again, a price rise of 5 rand doesn't really influence the wealthy, but it does influence the poor if prices of certain foods rise.
My wife looked at me when the moment foot and mouth disease popped up as a presidential issue. She said, "Is the meat in the freezer still safe to eat?" And I said, "Well, I think so." My second thought was, perhaps we should lay in a huge store of meat before the prices jump, precisely as you describe it. Because if the herds need to be culled, or if the animals pass away, then the prices obviously will rise, laws of supply and demand being what they are. But I think most suburban consumers don't necessarily immediately associate hoof and mouth disease with their weekly budget or monthly budget, depending on how you shop. And yet at the same time, it's quite clear, you buy food, it's ultimately dependent on the availability of either the product or its substitutes. And the range of substitutes for beef is obviously a little bit limited. I mean, unless you're a vegan, I guess, then you have other choices. Was there anything else that struck you as particularly, we only have a minute or two left for this segment, but was there any other point that really struck you as crucial?
I think that the crime, just want to say on the crime, the same-day deployment into Gauteng and Western Cape was quite important, because why that was done was because of institutional trust. I think the failing institutional trust in South Africa was why the government acted on that. They need to get people to believe in institutional trust, or to believe in the system again, policing system and so on. And that was what happened this year. So that's quite important development that can even influence outside investment. So that was one thing that I think was quite significant, because you don't always see the government deploying the army to solve these issues.
Fred, we're going to unfortunately have, we could spend the rest of the week dissecting this speech in deeper depth, but we're going to have to move on. But I do thank you very much for joining us. Again, apologies for the early technical glitch. This has been section one of the Deep Dive with your host, Brooke Spector, that's me, and senior lecturer Frederick Kirsten from the University of Johannesburg, Department of Economics. And we have been looking at last night's State of the Nation address. And we will be back in a moment with part two of our program. We're going to talk theater with an old friend of the station, Daphne Kuhn, old friend of mine as well. And Fred, thank you very much, and we'll talk again for sure.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the show.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are back after those brief messages. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host, as usual. It's Friday mornings, 9 to 10. Second guest for the... We don't always do two guests. Sometimes... we do one long conversation with somebody, but this morning we really felt it was important to at least take a brief pass at this last night's State of the Nation address, hence our first half of our show. And this second half is Daphne Kuhn. She's now got all the pieces working on her computer, and we see her in there, and she's giggling, so that's a good sign. And we're going to talk about the Theater on the Square, which is her carefully nurtured child over decades of work. She's made this thing. She has breathed life into this theater. If you go into that theater and you go down the steps, you see literally dozens and dozens of posters for plays and shows that have been on her stage for decades, all manner of things, serious drama, comedies, farces, one-person shows, ensembles, even every once in a while, something as unusual as a two-man version of Aida by Giuseppe Verdi, and a very large roll of brown butcher paper. Which I remember because I love that opera, and I was just fascinated the way two people could make that almost work for me. I mean, I missed the elephants. I kept waiting for the elephants. They never showed up. They were on the paper, but they weren't there. Anyway, Daphne, it's really good to have you. We can talk a bit about your view for the year, but you have a show that we should talk about now, which is The Tramp, which is not about rubbish collectors. It's about Charlie Chaplin. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely about Charlie Chaplin. But it's a musical cabaret paying homage to Charlie Chaplin, the great, great comedian, director of film, and it investigates through the medium of music and story his life and his alter ego, the Tramp. And it is brought to vivid life in such a glorious way with images of and snippets of movies by the wonderful award-winning Daniel Anderson, the performer, you probably remember from the very successful production Vincent, about Vincent van Gogh, that you saw last year, and it's been overseas and wherever. And this beautiful production is currently on at Theatre on the Square. We really urge people to come and see this wonderful performance. And it's such an interesting play. And on the piano accompanying Daniel and the story and the music is the magnificent pianist Paul Ferreira. So it's a production in association with us here at Theatre on the Square, together with Wella Capella Productions, the director's Amanda Buerta. And we're very proud to reopen again with this beautiful production, The Tramp. We have a very special offer for Valentine's evening tomorrow night. And it's on till the 28th of January. So don't miss it. As I say, it basically pays tribute to Charlie Chaplin.
But roll back and say, you said 28th of January. I hope you meant 28th of February.
Sorry.
I was listening.
Very good, very good.
When people think of Charlie Chaplin, they think of the actor, and they think of the... A version of physical theater, but they always, well, not always, some people remember, people often forget that he was also a composer of his own music.
Yes.
And he arranged music, he composed his own music, and he came into popularity just at the beginning of the sound era for film. And so suddenly his repertoire became larger, and the way in which he could perform expanded, rather than in the case of some early actors, suddenly had shrunk. He was able to embrace the new technology and the new medium with enthusiasm and with real excitement.
That's absolutely right. One of his songs is performed in the show, and the rest is a combination of appropriate songs that are very familiar and beautiful that Daniel Anderson presents. Of course, it also shows his political activity and how he was, convicted and sent out of America, and they lived in with Una O'Neill, his wife, for many years in Switzerland, and eventually he was invited back to the Oscars, where he won the Lifetime Achievement Award. So it's a very moving piece and very interesting. It covers the whole history of the early part of the 20th century. And so we're very excited to have Daniel and Paul back. And we urge all our friends and lovers of music and theatre to come and see this little theatrical masterpiece.
When you think Charlie Chaplin or the Tramp, I mean, it's very easy to think that he is that character with the ill-fitting trousers and the oversized shoes and things like that, except that he was rather more debonair and he was rather more worldly. And you see different versions of him in later films like The Great Dictator, in which there is no evidence of the little Tramp whatsoever. But there is, just as you say, the political views that are important.
And that's why the play is interesting, because it investigates the real life story of Charlie himself and his alter ego, the Tramp. And which was more famous, the Tramp or Charlie himself? So it is fascinating.
Daphne, we have to take a station break here, an ad break, really. I have to... If we don't do that, people are going to get very angry with me and we'll be in real trouble. So let me read this message, please. And once we do that, if you don't mind, you will log out of our current Zoom link and then come right back in, because we're going to run out of Zoom link time. So let me read the message and then we will rejoin in just a minute. Planning Pesach 2026, make it exceptional with Pesach in South Africa, hosted at the Capital Zimbali Resort from the 1st through the 10th of April. Expect five-star gourmet glatt kosher cuisine under S.A. Bet Din supervision, outstanding entertainment, hazanut and shirim, plus kids and teen clubs running all day, a luxury spa, and world-class golf courses. Safaris are available before, during, and after Pesach with post-Pesach Shabbat options in Cape Town or at the Capitol. Visit aussiepesach.com. That's AussiePesach.com or email info@aussiepesach.com to book or inquire.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And there we are, Daphne Kuhn, live and in the flesh electronically. You know, it's funny, we can talk to people around the world and all over, probably talk to people when they're on the moon this way, but the gremlins in the machinery will do us in every time. You know, it's, I have a story, I don't have time for the story today, but someday I will tell it about the way in which people can defeat even the best impulses of electronics. But we're talking with Daphne Kuhn right now, the head of the Theater on the Square in Sandton, that marvelous institution that's been with us for decades and that she carries on her back virtually through thick and thin, hundreds and hundreds of different activities and productions and everything. On now is The Tramp. And we were talking about the difference between Charlie Chaplin, the person, and Charlie Chaplin stroke the tramp persona, and the fact that in his political and personal life, he was in fact a very strong civil libertarian and opponent of fascism, and had been basically frog marched out of the United States because of his views, and only later in life was allowed back, basically. He was in exile for years in Switzerland, and the Academy of Arts, of the Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, at the end of his life, gave him a Lifetime Achievement Oscar. If you remember the film The Great Dictator, he sang, he danced, he made a strong political message, and he was funny all at the same time, and there was not a hint of his alter ego, the Tramp. But I'm afraid that we have not a whole lot of time left, but I want to ask you, please, what else do you have in mind for the rest of your year at the Theatre on the Square?
Well, firstly, thank you, Brooks, for all your support always. You've been a friend of the theatre, and we really value what you do for us and on radio and wherever you have supported theatre and entertainment. Well, yes, The Tramp is very exciting with Daniel Anderson, the wonderful performer, beautiful musical cabaret. And as you rightly said, the life of Chaplin is closely woven through his beloved Tramp character, where the line between comedy and tragedy is often blurred. We've also just had a great season, 2 weeks sold-out season of a Holocaust play, so unexpected, a beautiful production written and produced by Luke Albinski about his mother in Poland during the Warsaw Ghetto, a most outstanding production, and we hope to bring it back at a later stage. A big cast, mixed cast, and it certainly appealed to everybody because of its, what is happening in the world today, and certainly because of its theme, Nobody Told Me. So those stories that live with us forever that we are often untold. So it was Begging to Be Polled, a beautiful play. We open again in a few weeks after The Tramp with a new play called The Opera Singer. And that is written by Jana Ramos-Violente. It's on at the Baxter Theatre right now. It will star one of our leading actresses in South Africa, Fiona Ramsey, together with an English actor and singer, Honey Voice, Owain Rice Davies. So we're very excited about the new play coming up from the 12th of March. In between The Tramp and The Opera Singer, we'll be hosting the Johannesburg Film Festival and a comedy with the delightful Nina Hasty, and it's called Tangents. And then after the film festival, for the children this time, last year we had a great season of The Diary of the Wimpy Kid, which we hope to bring back also at a later stage. But we're also presenting in association with the Pretoria Youth Theatre, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, for 2 weeks from the 31st of March to the 11th of April. And then a Paul Slavolepsy play is being presented by us. It's one of his iconic plays, The Return of Elvis to Bisani, and starring Ashley Downs. And then something a little bit more interesting and political, you may say, a new play about Albie Sachs, and it's going to be called Father's Sons and Soft Vengeance by Gail Lowe. And that will be something to look
for. Can I just interrupt for a second, because otherwise my sponsors are going to have my neck. Don't go away. Do not go away. Looking for a Valentine's plan that's actually special and effortless? The Family Bakehouse is hosting a Valentine's date night on Saturday, the 14th of February. That's like tomorrow, starting at 8:15 at the Bakehouse Cafe, Ordox Linksfield. Expect a romantic three-course dinner made in-house with love, and there's entertainment to keep the vibe going after the starters are gone. It's 1,100 Rand per couple, and bookings are required, however. So don't leave it till the 13th in panic to reserve. Well, that's today, so you got to get on the ball. To reserve your table, WhatsApp 065-585-7223. That's 065-585-7223. And we are speaking with Daphne Kuhn, and we have just a couple of minutes left on the Theater on the Square, and she was sort of in mid-year with her presentations of what's already booked. Daphne, finish, keep right on going with what else you have already in line.
Right. After the Albie Sachs story, we are bringing back our beloved comedian and satirist Nick Rabinowitz. He'll be back in May for a couple of weeks, and also Sculptor Sodenhout. And then there'll be a new American play called that we'll be presenting called Constellations, and followed by a number of other productions that I'm sure your listeners will be very interested to hear about, perhaps at a later stage. But I should just mention that we are totally passionate about our music concerts, which we host every single Friday and have been for the last a couple of decades. As you know, we've been around for at least three. And today, for example, we've got Malcolm Ney, South Africa's one of the finest pianists, playing a duet with another iconic violinist, Assassin Diamond, in a duo, where they'll be presenting works by Franck and many other composers. Next week, and on a lighter note, in lieu of Valentine's, a violin and guitar duet with Crystal Burkholz and Rory Gadden, and so it goes on. Do look at our website, which is www.theatreonthesquare.co.za, where you'll be updated with whatever's on at the theatre, that which is present, and that's coming up. And we are so excited to present our new programme for 2026, and hope to see all the listeners of High FM at the theatre, and to see them at the theatre, as they always support us, and which we thrilled, and we always thrilled to host them as well. Thank you so much.
I didn't mention it, but when you were discussing The Tramp, and you sort of just glossed right over the fact that Paul Pereira is the accompanist pianist to the thing. Yes. Paul's very versatile as a pianist. He has been an opera repetiteur, and he has done all manner of other things.
Absolutely.
And he's a favorite in our household as well.
His books, because you and Ruth love the music and you support the opera. In fact, last Friday, our lunch hour concert was a beautiful recital with Linda van Kopenhagen. I don't know if you know the opera singer who's done so well. She's South African, living in Germany with her husband. And he's also an opera singer. And Paul played as well. He was the accompanist. So he is indeed so versatile. And we're so thrilled and proud to have him on our stage.
Let's make sure everybody knows, in case they don't, where this theater is, because it's below ground. You have an entry, you have an outside entry foyer, and you are inside Mandela Square. You go to the, I guess, opposite from where the statue is, and it's on the left-hand side. You see the marquee. It says Theater on the Square. You go in, and you go down the steps to the theater, and there you are. And you grab a seat in that lovely amphitheater you have that seats, what, maybe 100 to 200 people thereabouts?
200, yes. It is on the level at the Nelson Mandela Square, which is the extension of Sandton City. It's on that level right next to all the restaurants. So it makes a lovely evening out to come to the theatre, have a bite at one of the restaurants or coffee bars. And of course, there's all the best shops around, and easy access right into the theatre. And for those that are in a wheelchair or have walkers, we have an entrance from the car park as well. There's a paraplegic entrance and a special ramp so that there are no steps. So do let us know if you're coming, and we'll make that available and open.
We have been talking with Daphne Kuhn, the head of the Theater on the Square in Sandton. The Tramp is on now, but she's got lots of other stuff going. Before Daphne, we talked to Fred Kirsten of the University of Johannesburg, trying to take some nuggets out of the State of the Nation address. And we will be back next week with the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we will have vanquished all the technical gremlins, and we will have exiled them all to some far-off place. And we will be back with you again next week. You be safe, you be careful. Have a good weekend.